Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy
way. Welcome, this is Eric. This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
Opening tones by Jewel Big Green, courtesy of Song Finch. So if you like his work, we'll put a link to his Facebook page, I think. Of course, we're recording a week ahead like we normally do, so you've heard the theme song a couple times, but earlier this week I got to play it for our mother, and her reaction was a little different than I expected it to be.
Well, yeah, also apparently because you made her listen to the whole thing.
Well, yeah, all I had was a copy of the whole thing at that point. So, and of course, Journey was also saying, Journey was in the background saying, "It's so ridiculous! It's so ridiculous!" But of course, she was humming it all the way home in the car. Anyway, so what was your interpretation of how mom thought about it?
It was long.
Because what the conversation she and I had was like, she's like, "How do you like this?" I'm like, "I think it's great." "Does Drew like it?" Yeah. Drew likes it. "Has Jason heard it?" Yeah, he likes it too. She's like, I said, "You don't like it?" She goes, "I want to hear what Dougie thinks."
I just got off the phone with her probably 10 minutes ago. We were having a conversation where she just asked me that same thing. I think the order was, "Eric likes it." I said, "Yes." "You like it?" "Yes." "And Drew likes it?" I said, "Drew bought it. I hope he likes it."
Exactly.
And Drew chose the style.
Yeah. I said, "You know, she goes, "It's long." And I said, "But yeah, but you pay money for something. You want your value. You want it to be long." I mean, I think if it were 30 seconds, Drew would feel pretty, pretty slighted by the amount of money that he may have spent on it. Although I don't know, and I'm not prying. So,
I don't mind sharing. I got it. It's normally like $200, but they were running a Prime Day special of $50 off.
Sweet.
So I thought that was too good a deal to pass up.
I got some advertising money to make up for that, is what you're saying. So
I got to change the business cards to include you guys as executive producers as well as talent.
No, not at all. No. It was fun to do.
Yeah, it was. It's fun to listen to.
No, I love it.
And it's fun and goofy and it fits right in.
It is ridiculous, but it's perfect. It fits us.
There will be no time that I will play the entire thing that mom heard all on the show. Because it's a bit repetitive and it's got like a little break in the middle and everything. And it's like, so it's easy to cut apart.
Well, I want the remix. The 12-inch extended super club.
I want to hear the version with the movie clips.
Exactly. So anyway, so tonight we're going to talk about the movie Leap of Faith. 1992, so it hits in the sweet spot for the Anderson brothers.
It does.
And it's a directed by Richard Pierce.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
I have no idea who that is.
He's best known for directing Heartland.
I don't even know what Heartland is.
Gene Shalit says it all. Heartland is heartfelt. A film to make you proud, to make you feel good. That's not even English.
Did we all see this in the theater together?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. This was probably prime Steve Martin for me.
Well, and this was a great role for him because he got to be ridiculous, but serious and mean.
Exactly. He got to play Alton Brown.
Yeah. So I really kind of appreciated that.
Yeah, watching this movie again at my now advanced age, it has allowed me to sort of synthesize and crystallize something that I've been, I think, kind of wrapping my head around with Steve Martin over the past few years. And I think he probably is not very likable. Like, he's really funny and charismatic, but there's something about him. There's some kind of darkness or arrogance or something that's underlying it all. And I think it really shines through in this movie. In a good performance.
Because, you know, there's the goofy Steve Martin, the jerk Steve Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Dirty, rotten scoundrels.
Yeah. But yeah, then there's the edgier Steve Martin, the more intellectual Steve Martin, like in his...
Mixed Nuts.
Well, his book of short comic pieces called Pure Drivel. I love it. Because it's at once absurd, but it's also very like intellectual and highbrow, but it also makes fun of it being intellectual and highbrow. Kind of like L.A. Story. Like, L.A. Story is like a... It's a love letter to Los Angeles, but it's also a complete, tear down satire of Los Angeles.
So you haven't seen L.A. Story recently?
Not recently, no.
It is a rough rewatch.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what it is about Steve Martin is even when he's being, like, super goofy, there's always, like, this little tinge of, like, mean-spiritedness.
Yeah. I think so.
Have you guys seen The Spanish Prisoner?
Yes.
He's really good in that.
He is. That's a mammoth movie, right?
It is. He is so good.
But again, he's got the con man thing. That's mm-hmm. I think that's also because it's David Mamet. It's also probably Ricky Jay. And, you know, Ricky Jay was part of this movie, too.
He was technical
advisor. Yeah, he was technical advisor for The Cons.
Man, Ricky Jay.
That's a crazy career. So, anyway. Yeah. Okay, so
watch yourself around that guy.
Yeah, exactly. So, Brother Jay, is this on your list?
It is.
Okay, so why don't you introduce us to Leap of Faith?
As we discussed, the three of us saw this together in a movie theater. It was 1992, so I would have been out of high school for a year-ish and a half. I would no longer have been working at the University 6 at that point. I had moved on. But I remember having watched this movie in the theater and being blown away by how in-your-face it was about how fake it was. It seemed to me pretty legitimately honest from a, no, we're totally conning you kind of way. And then the twist at the end really, I did not see that coming. So I really enjoyed it the first time I watched it. And I watched it a couple years ago. And I remember thinking, this is still a good movie. And we watched it, boyfriend Jesse and I watched it a couple, I think Saturday or Sunday. And it's still a great movie. It still holds up. It's still amazing and hilarious and funny and sad and gut-wrenching and appalling and anger-inducing. And we went, you know, a whole week without a Liam Neeson movie.
Exactly. Now we're back. We're back to Liam Neeson.
But he has another ridiculous accent.
I have a whole little section I want to talk about Liam Neeson in this movie.
But it was great to see Steve Martin. It was great to see Deborah Winger. You know,
was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Deborah Winger was in movies that I consciously avoided, like Terms of Endearment and An Officer and a Gentleman and Urban Cowboy.
But you haven't seen Terms of Endearment?
Nope. But she's also in Drew's favorite movie, Rachel Getting Married.
Why is that my favorite movie?
Because it's one of those knee slapper, rib tickler comedies.
Wait, you've seen Rachel Getting Married, right?
No, I just heard about it. I mean, I'm familiar that it's actually painful to watch, right?
It's really good, but yeah, it's a little rough.
Yeah, she was in Forget Paris with Billy Crystal.
Oh, man.
She was in a movie that Jason, I can imagine, loves, Wilder Napalm.
I don't think I've seen Wilder Napalm.
Oh, she was in Black Widow, a Teresa Russell movie. She was in Legal Eagles, which is a movie I watched recently because I had a fondness for it. Because I think it was the first time I had ever seen, like, Dan Brownfield and I went out to Valley River Cinemas in Eagle River and watched three movies in a row. We watched Ruthless People, Legal Eagles, and Running Scared. And so I thought, well, great, these are all great movies. Turns out Legal Eagles is a hard rewatch.
Imagine that. Valley River 6 was the sister movie theater of University 6.
Does that mean you got to watch those movies for free?
No. Yep. Well, you may have.
He didn't.
I didn't, no. No, we actually bought tickets for each individual movie and, yeah.
Oh, you fools.
Spent all day out there, yeah. I was never the type to go and sneak into theaters and stuff. I was too much of a wuss to try that.
I've told you about my Valley River double feature experience, right?
Negative.
It was me and a couple of my crew at the University 6 who had the day off together and decided we wanted to go see a couple movies at Valley River because they were having a double feature. Well, they were playing alternate movies. It's not necessarily a double feature, but they'd play one movie and then the next showing would be a different movie, but it was in the same auditorium. So if you ended up in that auditorium, basically it was a double feature. And so we drove out there and it was Quick Change. Which is...
Yes. Yes, that is a...
Bobcat Goldthwait, I believe.
And Bill Murray in there?
Bill Murray. Yeah. And it was as bad as you think it is.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Well, it is. Yeah. And there's... The best joke in it is just sort of dirty and uncomfortable.
Well, Bill Murray's in it. Gina Davis is in it. Randy Quaid's in it. I swear Bobcat Goldthwait's in it, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm misremembering things, but it was awful. It was awful, awful. And we had gone. And Phil Hartman was in it. I forgot. Tony Shalhoub. See, there was a ton of people in Quick Change. Stanley Tucci was in Quick.
No. Yeah, but it was before the Shaloubazons.
Good grief. Anyway. So we were like, hey, we're gonna great this movie, and it sucked, and we were all like, oh man. We just wasted. Well, this next movie will be better. And as it turns out, the next movie was Ghost.
Another movie I have not seen. Didn't you love Ghost? Aren't you guys both on record saying you love Ghost? apparently not. Apparently you're not on record saying anything. It's just a big, big sigh. We all love Swayze. Well, that's not quite true.
I think Patrick Swayze is pretty good in Ghost, but Demi Moore's kind of rough. Whoopi Goldberg was okay. But, yeah. And then the ending is really chicken shit.
We're going to talk about endings in this movie as well.
So I enjoyed Ghost very much. It's a great movie. I love Patrick Swayze. Demi Moore, and Whoopi Goldberg, I can take her or leave her. But Ghost was great. I mean, it was powerful, and I didn't know anything about it. So going into it, I was blind. It was just this nonstop movie that I didn't know what was happening as it was happening. So I got to be caught up in that whole experience. However, I was with like three other teenage, burly, surly dudes, straight dudes who were like, you know, who were all like bawling at the end of this movie. And so it was a very quiet car drive back to Anchorage because none of them wanted to talk about it.
That's some funny stuff there.
So we were all like still four of us in a car driving back to the city together. It was just silent.
Yeah.
And then when we got back to the parking lot, we all just like scattered like cockroaches and I don't think we said goodbye to one another. We just all like went all different directions of the compass. We were gone.
As someone whose first date with my future wife was Schindler's List, I can relate to your experience.
I'm still baffled, but I'm amazed. You're lucky she married you. We're lucky she married you.
Yes, I am too.
And grateful. Yeah, so Drew, what are your leap of faith memories, and what was your experience this time?
My experiences were, I think, quite different. Because when the first time we watched in the theater, I was about 15 or 16, sort of early high school. And that's sort of right in the range of being like a dipshit asshole teenager who knows everything and is smarter than the whole world. So I think I really related to Steve Martin the first time I saw this movie, and like sort of reveled in the fact that he was able to pull a con on these small town simpletons. And I had a different experience this time. I was worried that rewatching this movie, it would be really sort of heartless and anti-religion, or at least anti-religious people. Because I would not really be here for that anymore. But I was pleasantly surprised that I thought it handled all of that conflict actually really well, and it didn't. I don't think the point of view of the movie like looks down on people who had faith. I think it actually treated that with respect, and I was really pleasantly surprised rewatching this movie. This is a good movie, and I think it holds up really well.
Yeah. I got a list. Here's my list.
Uh-oh.
No, here's my list.
Okay.
And I gave it to you guys in some text formats just because it was on the top of my head as we were chatting about other things. But the main thing I thought was Liam Neeson. I blame casting director Gretchen Rennell. I don't know what Gretchen's problem was. I don't know if she was high on airplane glue the day that, yeah, maybe she and Liam had a little rendezvous. But
here's he's British, not French or whatever.
He might even be Irish. I don't know. But what he's not, he's not Midwest.
No.
And as long as there are actors who are Midwest. Well,
he wasn't Asian either the week before last. So.
Well, that's true. But at least that was in a fantasy movie where he could change appearances or whatever. He could cloud men's minds. Wait, that's The Shadow, not League of Shadows. Anyway, see, but yeah, it's like, Liam Neeson is fine. Like, he's the right age for it, I suppose. He's the right, like, height, I suppose. But he can't pull off the accent, and he comes off like a dullard.
I think he's supposed to come off as a rubish backwater cop.
Yeah, but because of the accent, it took me out of it. It's like, is he deaf? Is that why he speaks with such a strange accent? So as long as the world includes Tommy Lee Jones and
Sam, you know his character actually is deaf, right?
I hope his character is deaf, yes. That would be great. That would explain a lot. I'd have a lot more sympathy.
By the way, Liam Neeson is from Northern Ireland, so.
And he doesn't have the gravitas that the sheriff should have. He actually seemed kind of tentative. He didn't seem like again, I want someone like Tommy Lee Jones or Sam Elliott or...
Sam Watterson would have been great in this role.
Sam Watterson would be fine. Sam Neill would be fine because he could pull off the accent. Yes. Neil Diamond would have been fine.
No, that's you've gone too far.
So what I'm hearing you say is you believe he may have been cast because he is a human tripod. But you don't believe he brought what the kids nowadays would call the big dick energy.
Well, yes, you said it better than I could ever. Yeah.
Where have you heard this expression? Is this around the office water cooler? Or?
No, this is in the zeitgeist. Steve Martin brings big dick energy everywhere. Except perhaps on the banjo stage.
I am unfamiliar with this term, so I have just been educated.
Yeah, you look it up, big dick energy.
No, I'm not going to look it up.
Yeah.
That's well, wait till you're at work.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Pretty sure those are going to be blocked.
Or just ask people on public transportation. Just look at your, like, point at your phone and say, what does big dick energy mean? Yeah.
If we ask our father, that's something completely different.
You know, there are some people you don't want to know their reaction to that.
Got my voltmeter. My fluke meter.
Maybe he just came really cheap. Maybe that was the Liam Neeson equation there.
I don't...
You know who would have been a good sheriff? Meatloaf.
Boo Gossett Jr.
You know, yeah. It was so great to see Meatloaf and Philip Seymour Hoffman. They were treasures at the beginning of the movie. I was like, I was so excited. I actually paused the movie and told boyfriend Jesse, like, I am so happy.
And they are the cutest, most lovable guys ever. It's like, you know, if you've watched Meatloaf recently in movies like Fight Club, you know, he's perfectly sympathetic, but he's not, like, cute and lovable like he is in this movie. And yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman, he should have had, like, the beard and the long hair more.
Well, as I said, he was almost just playing his Boogie Nights character.
Oh, yeah, except straight. He was cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then Deborah Winger is so damn cute, and she's such a good actress that it's great. She's the perfect, I guess, who would be the equivalent now, like Sandra Bullock?
Maybe early Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're all getting older. Yeah, no, Deborah Winger is a national treasure. Actually, you know what? You know who does come from a foreign land but pulled off an accent? Lolita Davidovich. Sorry,
where is she from? Last
name. I think she's Ukrainian.
She's good. She reminded me that I may be like only one of four people in the entire world that liked True Detective season 2.
I still have not seen it yet, but I will. I remember.
She's in it.
Remember her from Blaze, where she played Blaze Star.
Intersection.
Yes.
Ah.
That's, you know, we should watch that just because it's Richard Gere, Sharon Stone, and Lolita Davidovich.
Oh, it was not a good movie.
I've never seen it.
Well, my memory is it was not a good movie.
And, you know, I stand corrected. She, her family comes from the Ukraine, but she was born in London, Ontario, Canada. So
she's got the Canadian.
Maybe not the accent.
Yeah, she did just fine, I guess. So she was great. And again, Meatloaf was fantastic. Philip Seymour Hoffman was fantastic in a small role. But you know the other thing I liked about this movie? That, and I was asking my wife about this later, I don't realize how much I enjoy really up-tempo gospel music. Are you ready for a miracle? Ready as I can be. Are you ready for a miracle? Set you free. Are you ready? Ready. Are you ready? Ready. Are you ready? Ready. Are you ready? Ready. 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 Are you ready for a miracle? Like, if I believed in churchy stuff, that's the church I would want to go to. I mean, I want to hear about the highway to heaven. I want to have the whole like big happy choir kind of feel. Like big solemn choirs. Like, you can keep your tabernacle people. But give me a... I think I want to go on an adventure that includes seeing the movies Sister Act 1 and 2.
So what you're saying is music that is specifically designed and engineered to be upbeat and joyful ended up making you feel happy.
Well, that's a cynical way of looking at it, yes. But yeah, no, how about this? I am not immune to the charms of the gospel music. I also like the patois of carnival barkers and preachers. I like
the music. I like the music rhythm. In this movie was great.
Oh, it was great. And it's just, and Steve Martin doing his shtick, doing his, what's the guy's name? We were talking about Benny Hinn, but also I think he was more related to, Peter Popoff, who is known for having, people in the audience mic'd so he could do his, special, cold reading, faith healing stuff. Although I guess it's not cold reading if you actually have spies in the audience.
Huge databases and ears and eyes everywhere.
Yeah, actually, I like how Steve Martin was like Benny Hinn up on stage, and then you got to see him be like Dr. Gene Scott in the bus.
Yes. Yep.
And just the opening scene with the cop ticket hustle.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. And it was fun that, yeah, you're right. From the very beginning, everybody is in on the fact that it's a scam. Like, Okay, so I guess we should probably talk about the plot a little bit. It's a pretty simple plot. We have, let's see here. Actually, I don't even think we have a gigantic plot summary available to us, but.
Let me ask you this while you're looking at it. Okay. Do you think everybody in the show knew it was a scam?
Mm-mm. No.
Like, do you think the gospel Mm-mm. singers and stuff thought it,
nope.
knew it was a scam?
Well, exactly. Nope. No. There were a handful of people that knew it was a scam.
I think the only people that knew it was a scam was the people that rode on his bus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think it was a small circle.
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Hoffman and Mr. Loaf knew it was a scam.
And the Guy Fieri-looking bodyguard
dude. Yeah, the big guy.
The dude from Lost.
So, yeah. You're right. You're right. Uh-oh.
You still there, Jason?
I lost Jason. Say something. Something. Say something. I've been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. I've been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. I've been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb and carried by the Holy Ghost. I am redeemed by the blood of the Lamb.
Aluminum siding.
So much fun.
You know, every once in a while, I think about it, and then I get depressed all over again that you lost that whole outtakes file.
It depresses me, too. Are you there, Jason?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm here.
By the way, I did enjoy the fact that you left the whole Tibet discussion in the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I got to dime myself out also. Yeah. Did you know that there's a musical?
Yes, a very, very terrible, awful version that didn't do well. Also, Boyfriend Jesse and I were talking about this. He really dug this movie. He thought this was a great movie.
Had he really seen it liked before? It a lot.
Nope, we'd never seen it before. But he really liked it. He thought it was great. What I want to know is halfway through the movie, where did her dog go? It just disappeared. It's gone. never seen ever again.
I think the butterflies ate it.
Yeah,
but then Boyfriend Jesse, I don't know if we want to get to the end yet, but
yeah, that's fine.
Boyfriend Jesse said at the end, he said Jonas did to Boyd what his mother did to him, abandoned him.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get that at all.
Yeah.
So,
but
that's how dense I am.
We'll get to no. We'll get to the end here. But so let me do a little plot work here for us. But we have the movie opens with faith healer Jonas Nightingale, played by Steve Martin. He makes a living traveling across America holding tent revival meetings and conducting purported miracles. He is helped by his friend and manager, Jane Larson, Deborah Winger, and an entourage of fellow con artists. We discussed before, and they're not all con artists. One of the trucks breaks down in the fictional town of Rustwater, Kansas. With its 27% unemployment, it's in desperate need of rain to save the crops. So learning they're going to be staying in Rustwater for days waiting for parts for the vehicle, they decide to just hold a revival meeting there, despite the small size of the town and the fact that they're all poor. Early on, Jonas meets Marva, a waitress in a local cafe. She rebuffs his persistent advances. This is where we learn that Steve Martin thinks he's like super slick and can con everybody, because we've already seen him con his way out of a ticket.
That's where he makes the slingshot comment.
Yes. Oh, yeah, exactly. This is a thing of Steve Martin that kind of comes up in Steve Martin movies. you know, Steve Martin as the older guy who often gets the young girl in the movies. In this case, he just, his character just happens to be pretty, well, I guess he's misanthropic, not just misogynist. But yeah, the comment is, women are like slingshots. The more they resist, the more you'll, the more what?
The further you'll get with
them. The further you'll get with them, yeah. It's like, that's a little, tone deaf in 2018. Different times. Then we see that local sheriff, Will Braverman, played by Liam Neeson. You know who would have been a better sheriff? More believable, at least.
Morgan Freeman?
Greg Proops.
Greg Proops.
At least he would have had a better... Greg Kinnear. Yeah, exactly. Oh, Greg Kinnear would have been a great sheriff, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nick Nolte.
Yeah, sort of. He wouldn't have had that Deborah...
This movie would have been really intense.
Jeff Bridges, man. John Goodman, for that matter.
Yeah, yeah. Although, again, you want to have the romantic roles, and you don't see a lot of John Goodman romantic leads. And that's the other thing. It's like, she slept with a retarded sheriff. That's not... sorry. She slept with a developmentally disabled sheriff. Okay.
Just because he likes looking at butterflies. It is interesting, though. I mean, this is what one of his last, like, pre-Schindler's List roles, right?
I guess.
Like, he would never play the beta male again.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably not. Were you guys as offended by Liam Neeson as I was?
No.
I had a problem with his accent, and that bugged me. When he would start his accent, it would just rub me the wrong way, and I could just tell that it was forced fake.
It was all over the place.
Yeah, it was. It was.
It would have been fine if he would have said one word at a time. But if you had to string three or four of them together into a sentence, it would not last.
Peas and carrots, Jenny. So, yeah, no, I had a hard problem with his accent. And he's goofy. He was goofy too. He acted goofy in this movie. His mannerisms and he was lumbering.
So, he wasn't charming goofy either.
No, he wasn't suave. He wasn't the slick sheriff. He wasn't, you know, all the things that you would want.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with him, but what I did like and what I thought was a good aspect of the casting was, you know, just the way the movie's set up, he can't be the slick sheriff. He can't be the sheriff who outsmarts the bad guy, because the bad guy is the slickest and the smartest. But what he could be is he could be super handsome and physically imposing. And that's what they cast in Liam Neeson.
Yes.
And so he had to have sort of those opposite qualities of Jonas Nightingale, so that there'd be a reason for Jane to gravitate towards him as Jonas pushed her away.
You're right, because Jonas Nightingale is a slick mother trucker, and the sheriff is actually, he leads a simpler life.
Yeah, and he's a bit of a goody two shoes. Yeah. I mean, he is the exact opposite.
Also, the fact that Steve Martin speaks English with an American accent consistently. But that's okay. I mean, yeah, anyway, maybe I'm too hard on Mr. Neeson. He does fine in other movies.
No, I think he's a fine actor. I just think this role was probably a misfire. It was a good role, just not for him.
Well, keep his accent and explain it away with one line of dialogue.
See, I believe... Well, yeah, I agree with you about accents. There's, especially in this day and age, there's no reason not to just let people have accents.
Hump for Red October.
Yeah, but I believed it when Jane was digging, having her feet rubbed by Mr. Braverman, Sheriff Braverman.
I thought
it was completely believable.
I approve of the Braverman character. But he'd be more realistic as Dennis Leary.
Dennis Leary would have been good.
Although not in 1992. No.
Hey, Danny DeVito.
Yeah, Danny DeVito, not so much.
I'm just kidding.
But you're right.
See, Judge Reinhold.
Judge Reinhold was on an episode of a show called The Detour recently.
Uh-oh.
Bad. He was very funny, but he looked rough.
Yeah, I would imagine that would be about right.
Well, that's why it's got to be like a Tommy Lee Jones, you know, the 1992 version of Tommy Lee Jones. Or half a dozen other sort of, like Jeffrey Lewis. Although Jeffrey Lewis was probably not as a love interest, but he would have been a better sheriff. Just from the accent, he could pull off a southern accent.
I think, like, if you were casting it today, you'd want to cast somebody like Chris Evans, right?
I don't know. Maybe these days
you Simon cast... Pegg.
No. I think Drew's right. I think he's got to be, like, physically different than Steve Martin. Hmm. Okay, here we go. Let's recast it. Let's say Jonas Nightingale is played by Kevin Hart, and Will Braverman is played by Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Wow. I mean,
that would actually work great. They're physically different. You can see The Rock being a simple policeman, physically posing, but not a deep thinker. No.
See, if he was still alive, I would have said Vern Troyer as Jonas Nightingale.
No. Well, that would be a little departure.
A little departure?
You have to have somebody who can be physically imposing but still be like a gentle soul. I mean, if you had The Rock, he'd be in there just like breaking shit.
Okay, how about Vin Diesel?
Definitely not. Definitely not.
He would have the same problem with accents, but for a different reason.
You could have had like Vince Vaughn.
We need to see Get Shorty followed by Be Cool. Because yeah. I think Dwayne The Rock Johnson as Cowboy Roy is something to behold. Anyway, okay, so back to this movie. So we have Steve Martin trying to schmooze the waitress, the pretty waitress, Lolita Davidovich. Marva, it's a stupid name also.
Hey, it was her grandmother's
name. I know. I always felt like somehow like they lost a couple of the letters in that necklace, and that's how she was named Marva.
You know, be very careful about grandmother's names.
Well, that's true. So we have the waitress, whose little brother is Lucas Haas, who we know best from
Brick.
What was he in as more of a kid?
You know, I can't identify. I can't identify anything.
He's been in some like lots of stuff in the beginning. Who is in Witness? There we go.
Oh God, that was what Harrison Ford.
Yes, he was in Mars Attacks.
Wow, have you seen him lately? He looks rough. Whew. He looks like a heroin boy, Lucas Haas.
Well, this picture I'm looking at from Wikipedia from April 2007, he's also got gigantic ears and a bad tan, so he looks like a Monchichi doll. Yeah, he's been in much stuff. He was good in this movie.
He was in a 2013 movie, Meth Head.
Oh, there you go.
Is that what the picture's from?
Maybe so.
He was in The Revenant.
No, he was in Inception.
I've never seen that movie.
Inception?
Yeah. Is it good?
We'll find out in a few weeks.
Oh, he was in the Darwin Awards.
Never seen the Darwin Awards. Is that a movie or is that a...
It's a movie. Okay. It's a great movie.
Oh, well, I have to add it to the list.
Oh, it's comedy. No, you don't want to add it to the list.
We'll have to do 9 comedies in a row or something.
Yeah, so it's got Joe Fiennes and Winona Ryder and David Arquette. That's why it was... The Darwin Awards was a great movie, really.
Okay.
I loved it. It was stupid funny, but it was stupid funny in a way that was not patronizing, I thought, so.
So the Jonas Nightingale Miracles and Wonders, whatever, I loved the montage of erecting the tent.
Yes.
Great.
That was very cool to watch.
Cool and fascinating.
Watching erections?
I do. Yeah, it turns out.
And it was set to that gospel song that was really fun to listen to.
Yeah. Yep. Again, all the gospel music, I would buy the soundtrack, actually. And so you meet some of the townspeople. And, you know, this is really a hick town. They're farmers and they're simple folk and poor. And there's 27% unemployment. And the crops if it doesn't rain, they're not going to be able to feed their families. So the sheriff finds it particularly galling that this con man, this flim-flam artist, this fraud is going to come specifically into town to take these poor people's money away from them and give them false hope and then leave, wrecking his town. And at his heart, Jonas at least outwardly claims that he never promises anybody anything. He is, as far as like, he never claims to his friends that he is anything but a con man. Like, he's putting on a show for these people, and he'll take their money because they're rubes. But, you know, he never claims to his close cohort that he's anything but out for only himself.
No, he says at one point, I'm here to entertain you. If you're entertained, then pay up. Otherwise, move on.
Yeah. And he's got a very, very fun shtick.
Yeah, I love the bit where they put the perfectly able-bodied elderly lady in a wheelchair.
Yes, and they've got like trash cans full of crutches that they wheel out as props. I mean, they've got this whole thing down. This is not their first rodeo. They put this up from town to town. And, yeah, you know, he talks about, look, they also have to make a certain amount of money. Their nut is $3,500 a day, right? Which, even in 1992, that's a lot of money. But once you realize that they are driving this big circus tent contraption around with all the props and
with
all
a satellite people. Dish on the top.
Yeah. And, you know, having to pay the whole choir. That's for real. So we see a couple of performances or good old fashioned tent revivals, which I would be fascinated to go to. I would really like to go to a tent revival at some point. However, I would feel like travel. A fraud. Yeah. There's that. Yeah. So you see some of the shtick, and then you see Braverman, try to tell the crowd, that this guy's a fraud. More somber moment in like the middle. It looks like he's going to get his way, where he comes in and exposes Nightingale for being that's not even his name, and he didn't grow up in Appalachia. Instead, he lived in an orphanage and then had a life of crime, blah, blah, blah.
And Jonas spins it into gold.
Yeah. Yeah. This is not the first time he's been accused of these things. He even has rhymes for all these things. And then it gets a little more wacky, where he decides the town really needs a miracle, so he goes and paints. But Jesus' eyes open.
Yeah.
Which is a little weird.
A little bit of blasphemy there.
Again, Jonas is in it for the entertainment value and the monetary value of keeping the crowds high. And he gives people what they want. They want salvation. He's going to give them salvation.
And in the meantime, he is playing nice with Marva's younger brother to try and manipulate her.
Yes. Which I'm glad, actually, there was, maybe because we find out that the younger brother, he is crippled from a car accident where a drunk driver ran him over and, what, killed their parents?
Yes.
And now he walks only with crutches and poorly. But he also believes that even though the doctors say he'll never walk, he'll walk again if he has the faith.
Mm-hmm. And he's already been to a faith healer before, and it failed.
And the faith healer told him.
Yeah.
It's your fault. You don't have enough faith, kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that is some bullshit.
Yeah, and Marva wants now nothing to do with people like Jonas Nightingale. And the thing that makes Jonas a little bit, again, not sympathetic is the wrong word, but like he actually sees this and like is like, ooh, no, okay, we're done. He no longer courts Marva. like he enjoyed playing chess with a kid. You know, he thought it was like an enriching experience or whatever, and the kid was clever and all, but he's like, oh no, okay. So this bad thing happened to this kid. I want nothing to do with this anymore.
Yeah, I'm only gonna steal from the suckers. I'm not going to steal from the downtrodden.
Yeah, or at least not this one.
Right.
If her shield against being hit on is laying some truth on him, it worked.
Yeah, it did.
Which is actually nice, because if he kept hitting on her through the whole thing, I think it would have made him a little bit more dastardly. And in the meantime, we've got, what is it, Jane, who, let's see, is her name Jane? I hope her name is Jane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jane is kind of smitten.
Jane and Jonas.
Yes. Jane is smitten by the Will Braverman sheriff character. And even though she's only going to be in town a little while, and she knows it and he knows it, you know, there's no attraction.
And that's sort of her role, is to
distract,
charm the local authorities, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because she can, on one hand, she can, like, wear, you know, jaunty, jolly shorts and, like, you know, show off her cute legs and be sassy and flirty. And then she can put on her, like, her a school marm dress when she's actually in the crowd. So she's playing a role, too. She's a bit of a con artist herself. She's just behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is in the back control room with 1992 level computers, which I thought I found charming instead of distracting. yeah. Because you had all those computer manuals. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I did.
It was
great.
That was advertising right there.
Yeah, but it was also like a total flashback to when, you know, like,
you'd get... Welcome to Windows.
Except that she was using Macs.
So we have this tension where Braverman and Jane are, like, you know, falling in love or having at least some sort of, like, romantic, pleasant experience. And she's realizing that, you know, she could settle down. She doesn't need to be, you know, running around with the circus her whole life. And then there's some flim-flammery involving the collection plates and having people take their collection money back. And it turns out the money's been doubled in a very, maybe Peter Popoff did this, but also in a very Robert Tilton. like I remember watching Robert Tilton just as a kind of, you know, as a lark, as an interesting thing, because we watched enough Dr. Gene Scott. Seeing another preacher on TV as amusement wasn't all that unheard of in our house. But I can remember when him saying that, you know, these people would be sending in like prayer requests, and he'd be making these pleas for money, and he'd say, "You look, you know, if you have $10 and you give $10, that shows that you're supporting the church, but that doesn't show you have faith. If you've got $10, but you pledge to give me $100, that shows faith. And if you have enough faith, then God will provide." And, you know,
that is penetrating your heart. It's burning on the inside of you. And you need to make a vow of faith of $1,000. "Oh, Bob, couldn't you say 25? No. You can't make a $1,000 vow of faith. I'm saying in faith. So we got people that don't have, teenagers that have no, hardly nothing going for them, got enough faith to make a $1,000 vow and send a little $5 here and $10 there as God begins to move like a whirlwind in their lives. Because they don't have that old programming of religion. Well, this isn't the way we do it in my church. Forget your church. I'm talking about what God says. And if you want the kind of miracles that are in the Bible, you're going to have to do what God said to do. And I've got the faith to believe they'll come to pass. This is hot soil for anyone that's got the faith to sow into it right now. I mean right now. I mean right now, not tomorrow. That's part of your problem. God's already spoken a word to you and told you to do it. You need to do it right now. If you'll start now and get your seed of faith into the ground, it'll begin to grow and God begin to move.
And then he gives examples of, "I gave you my last money and also borrowed from my..."
I took all the money out of my pension, yeah.
Exactly, and I sent it to you. But then all of a sudden I got a windfall of that more than made for it.
There's that purse with that job again. I'm telling you, there's a person that has a terrible situation, a job, and it's caused a financial problems. It's brought unnecessary pressure and stress upon the home. And the family. And here's another part of it. It's caused incredible arguments between you and your husband and your spouse and your mate. It's, "Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord." This is somebody's day of harvest. There's a time to fast and a time to feast. There's a time to sow so there'll be a time to reap. Many people want to reap and they want to feast, but they're not willing to pay the price to sow in order that they can reap. I'm talking about your money, because your money is you. It's your blood, it's your sweat, your tears, it's driving down the freeways, it's going to work, it's believing, it's you. And letting go of it makes room for the new. Lot's wife didn't want to go on, and that was the end of it. She stopped in her tracks right now. How many minutes do we have? 3 minutes. 3 minutes. 3 minutes. 3 minutes. Thank you, Lord. I have said your word, and now I'm going to pray for those that's got the faith to do something with what they believe. Don, thank you, Jesus. Here's a $1,000 vow. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. You say you want to make a $500 vow? Then do it. Then do it. If that takes faith for you, do it. You want to make a $100 vow or two? If that takes faith, see, I like a thousand because I know I got you. I got you into faith. See, I'm teaching to enter into a covenant with God. When Jacob had nothing, he said, all I started with was a staff. And God blessed him with a multitude of flocks because he dared to enter into a covenant with God. And he promised God he'd give God a portion of all God blessed him with. Don't eat your seed. I said, don't eat your seed. You need to sow your seed and fulfill your vow. There's a person that's read the book and you've not made a vow of faith. You need to do that right now. I mean, right now. I'm going to lay my hand. I got to start praying.
It's crazy.
I remember not being able to just not stop laughing at, and then God said, Bob.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Or when he'd be trying to pull off the Jonas Nightingale thing about how, you know, he went from a sinner to a winner, and he went, but then of course Bob Tilton couldn't pull it off for more than a couple of rhymes, and he just go into because that's just speaking in tongues, and it's like, oh, it's a whole nother layer of audience that.
Someone with a digestive tract problems, quickly call. There's a miracle for you. Intestinal problems. Someone with similar intestinal problems. We've seen several people being delivered from the colostomy bag. Disability with a child, some type of a learning disability. We've seen many, many children healed. We've seen midgets grow. We've seen arms and legs that stop growing because the growth cells that stop. I don't make this stuff up. We have thousands of testimonials documented by people's.
Yeah, Robert Tilton, what a piece of work.
I showed after the movie, I showed Boyfriend Jesse the Benny Hinn montage that I had.
Oh.
And he said, oh my God, like he's smacking those people. I'm like, oh yeah, no.
Oh,
he injured some people. He actually hurt people.
Oh sure. Yeah. He hit people with his hands, he hit people, he whipped his coat at people.
It was crazy.
It's a weird, again, well, I think of things like, you know, this is goes straight back to Jonestown. Like at the People's Temple, they did healings and things too, just like this. It's like, man, you're just a year away from going to the jungle and killing yourself.
Or head to Pensacola in a semi-truck.
Yeah, there's a trivia on IMDb that says in 1993 in Pensacola, Florida, they started a five-year revival. The trivia is that, hey, maybe this is, you know, the end of the story. So anyway, so just to finish the plot here, so we have this whole for lack of a better word, come to Jesus moment where he's doing his last big performance for a blowing town probably, and he's healing people right and left, and then he sees the boy who wants to be healed. And so he ends the show early. He's like, he's done healing. The power has left him. Ooh.
Hightails it off the stage when the boy is trying to get up there.
But then the crowd shouts, just one more. And so he can't resist an encore. So he goes out there and he actually is preparing to do exactly what that other preacher did.
Except he's blaming the sheriff this time.
Yeah, he's like, if there's just one doubter in the audience, and we know who that doubter is, Mr. Hoover.
You can go now, Mr. Hoover. I'm so far afield now, Jeffrey Donovan, it's not even funny.
No, it's great, though. Now you've done your own.
Jeffrey Donovan could have been a really sinister Jonas Nightingale.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, most people that do Christopher Walken are actually doing Kevin Pollak's Christopher Walken, right?
Yes.
Or even Jay Moore's Christopher Walken. You know, very few people are doing Christopher Walken's Christopher Walken. So when you're doing Robert Kennedy, you're no longer doing Robert Kennedy. You're doing your interpretation of Jeffrey Donovan's.
Yes.
Yeah. So of course, then it's a real life miracle. The boy can walk now.
Dun, dun, dun.
And this screws up everything.
This really freaks out Jonas.
It freaks out Jonas. And in, okay, I'm going to be a little bit critical because the speech he gives the boy at the end, I think was the first time I saw Steve Martin acting in this movie. Like his little speech about how the one thing he's afraid of is the genuine article. I thought that was a kind of a little bit of a canned, memorized speech instead of natural acting. But it did sum up the point of he is a con man. Jonas Nightingale is a con man. What he can't have is the real thing, because that kind of shines a light on all the rest of the crap he's doing. Plus, since he never believed in any of it, it's like freaking him out. The con men, other people, the Meats Loaf and the Phillips Hoffman, they are like, oh, this is money in the bank. We got to take him on the road because we could reenact this every town we go to. And it seems like the boy wants to go too.
And they are such sycophants of Jonas that they think somehow Jonas set this whole thing up.
Exactly, yes.
The long game.
It's just like the violin. It's like they just think, oh, he's got something special about him. And that's again where Jonas tells the boy, sure, you know, you can go on the road with me. But you know, he's gonna ditch him, just like his mom did to him. And he actually tells Marva, your brother's going to come waiting for me at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going to be gone. And just tell him that, well, he doesn't say those words, but he says, you know, let him know that just because people don't wait for you or whatever doesn't mean they don't care. Which is sort of a bullshit thing anyway. Because he has even actually impressed Marva with his ability to cure her brother's lameness. So Jonas just decides to skip town. Like, he leaves the rest of his con man buddies, too.
Yeah, he gives up the con.
He's done. Which makes you wonder, so are these people out of a job? Do they promote Meatloaf? I mean, maybe it's going to be the Meatloaf tour.
Yeah, no, dude. Jonas screws everybody.
Yeah, because he's only out for himself. He told us in the very first scene.
He did.
But then another miracle happens, and it starts to rain. So he becomes the scariest hitchhiker that driver has ever picked up, because he's a raving madman.
Lunatic.
As it's raining, and the town has been saved, possibly by Jonas Nightingale. They've already seen a real-life miracle, a lame person to walk, and then now they're seeing...
As long as the flash flood doesn't take their car away, so they end up walking across the U.S. and then ending up floating down the river to Mexico.
Yeah, so we see the end of this movie is Jonas riding off to Pensacola, and it's raining, so the townspeople are joyous, and we get more gospel music, and then the credits roll with even more gospel music, and that's all great. But Roger Ebert, a favorite of the Brothers Anderson, he thought this was like a 3-star movie because the end he thought was a total cop-out. He wanted to know what happened at the end. He's like, there are people that will tell you that they left this movie open-ended so you can write your own ending to that, and those people are wrong. I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, you know, he wanted to know, like, he, of course, and he doesn't give away the ending in his review, but he says, you know, the thing that happens at the end, there's a thing that happens. And instead of talking about that thing or seeing where that thing leads everybody, they just sort of end on that thing. And he said that was a gutless cop out. So
he wanted an explanation of the miracle?
No,
or an exploration of it?
Yeah, well, he didn't, I don't think he was saying that he wanted to know, yeah, exactly that. I think he wanted
to see the results of what had happened.
Exactly. He wants to see, like, a month later, how this affected the characters that we've grown to like or loathe or whatever.
That would have been the sequel.
Leap of Faith 2. Farther
Leapfrog of Faith.
Leapfrog, yeah, there you go, yeah.
No, that there was
Quantum Leap of Faith.
Leapfrog 2, Florida, Leaping Lizards. No.
Yeah, sorry, what I was going to say is...
Hold on. Maybe they can actually, you know, they're reenacting that whole miracle every time they go to town. It could be LARP of Faith.
Oh, God.
Okay, sorry. Wow.
The thing okay. I appreciated the most about that was the finger guns.
It's too bad the people at home can't see that.
Yeah, I'm sad that I'm the only one that's going to get to experience that with the finger guns.
We will add a finger gun sound effect.
Pew, pew. I got to say, several times in this movie, Jonas was attempting to river dance, I think.
Yes. I loved his footwork.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I don't think he was attempting. I think he did it.
Yeah, the disco mirror jacket was awesome.
Oh, yes. I still want that jacket.
Go figure. I'm shocked.
If I could wear MacReady's hat and Jonas's jacket.
Jonas had some good lines. Manipulators are sneaky. I'm obvious.
Yeah.
I did think that the scene almost at the very end where Jonas is kind of freaked out about what happened and he's bewildered and angry. He thinks he might have been conned. And he's just pretty disgusted with the whole thing. And he's out walking among the people who are just kind of hanging out around the tent. That was a nice scene where he's looking around, realizing that the people he's been looking down upon and manipulating and conning are like actually experiencing like a really strong like sense of community and really coming together and being nice to each other. And that's what kind of pushes him over the edge.
You know, okay, so this, here's a question for you, since I'm not a big believer. Is Jonas Nightingale doing anything wrong? He's providing a service. Like, revival people are providing a service. Well, people want to have their spirits lifted. People want to have hope. People want to have faith. People want to have community. People want to be told what to do and to make the world a better place. People want to serve other people. They're just providing all that.
It's a very, I don't know. It's a tough call.
No, let me just be clear. I'm talking about the Benny Hinn, Jonas Nightingale, Robert Tilton, what I would consider like obvious con men. I'm not talking about whether going to a Billy Graham thing or going to your local church. That's not part of my discussion. But in the case of like the big revival thing, like the guy who comes through town and what he's offering is faith in the Lord instead of, say, snake oil.
Well, but I think that's the distinction that some people aren't as easily able to make, and that's the problem. I think if they're aware it's snake oil and they're going because it gives them a personal sense of faith, then that's fine. But I think the danger and the misfortune of it is that people go believing and then they're jilted.
But is it hurting them?
Well, it maybe not physically or mentally, but perhaps financially, giving the money away that they can't necessarily afford because they believe it will help them.
Yeah, okay, so that's part of the con.
I think it's hurting if there is a promise of something that's not going to be delivered. Whether it's an explicit promise or an implied promise.
Yeah, I mean, it's like putting them in a row of slot machines.
Because I think the less sinister version of like the con man tent revival is like some like sort of faith-based entertainment show where you have like the big muscle guys on stage ripping phone books open because they have the power of Christ or something. Those types of shows I don't think are promising anything other than entertainment and you know, probably some declarations of faith.
It's the WWE Jesus Smackdown.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say, is professional wrestling. That's what this is. Now, I can understand the argument that goes, if I have cancer and I decide to go to a tent revival instead of seeking medical attention for that cancer, like doctors and chemotherapy and whatnot.
See Andy Kaufman.
Well, I mean, it's also kind of your right. I mean, are you tricking somebody? I don't know. It's like essential oils. Like, are you tricking somebody into the latest like medical fad sort of fraud, you know? Is it like Herbalife or whatever? Is that wrong?
Again, I think it depends on how it ends up being applied and what the final effect is. You know, essential oils are fine so long as you're not using them in lieu of, and rather using them in conjunction with, a therapy. If you're using essential oil only because you're convinced it's going to cure your cancer, and you are foregoing possibly life-saving or life-lengthening, prolonging chemotherapy and or radiation, then that's harmful.
I think there's a huge difference between you will be healed if your faith is strong enough, and if you have faith, your life will be enriched.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I guess, because I don't want to offend the religious community or my brothers. You know, this really isn't my goal.
Well, yeah. Or your parents.
Or my parents. Yeah.
One of them, anyway.
I'm less concerned about that.
Yeah, that ship has already sailed. As you say,
they already pretty much know not to really expect me to participate in very many religious experiences.
Well, and Mom won't even listen to the show anymore after our new theme song, so it doesn't matter.
You know what? Okay. And I think maybe Jewel Big Green can help us with this. What if we just switched up the genre next time and do a gospel theme song?
Yes. I'd be down for it.
Brother Jay.
Yep.
What's your verdict?
I'm going to give this an A.
Brother Drew, was it worth it?
Definitely worth it. It's a good movie. It holds up. It's, what, 26 years old now?
Yeah.
And it still holds up. Steve Martin is sinister. That was a revelation.
So my final thoughts, I think, on the movie are that I think it's charming. It hits me in that nostalgia 1992 spot, but it's also kind of a charming movie.
It's a really good mix, I think, of cynical and earnest.
Yeah. Earnest. He could have been the sheriff. Yeah.
A very different movie.
Would it have been? If he wasn't playing his earnest character? No, I can't remember his name. Jim something.
Ernest? Jim Worrell?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Jim Varney, sorry.
Jim Varney, yeah. Sorry. No, Jim Varney.
Ernest P. Worrell.
Jim Varney was on The Nanny, I think. He was on some other shows where he didn't play the Ernest character. He's got a super deep voice because he's like a 19-pack-a-day smoker. And yeah, he could pull off that. He could have been the sheriff. I would have sent Kevin Spacey, but eh.
He'd have been after Boyd.
Poor Boyd.
Oops, sorry.
He couldn't run away fast enough, would he?
Ba-dum-bum. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.